And let the administrator tell us what we got before us, please.
Chair Scarman, Committee Council 2938-8 and Gross has a variety of things. First of all, it allows gas to provide alternative fuels to public or private entities operating alternative fuel vehicles. If the department determines that those fuels are not readily available, it still also establishes the Office of Energy as an independent agency, and it also allows the Department of Transportation to provide road location, construction, and maintenance project specifications to county governing bodies without cost. And we also have the -A11 amendment, which is directly related to Senate Bill 1115. At this point, the -A11 amendment is a gut and stuff amendment. I understand it's not the intention to put it as a gut and stuff amendment.
That is correct. We would, the chair would like to conceptually amend the -A11 amendment so that we can add it to and make it a part of the bill without removing all of the bill. But there is a request that we further conceptually amend House Bill 2938 by removing section 3 on line 12, page 2, through line 16, and including section 4 to just simply remove those two sections from the bill.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, we also have a conflict with this bill and Senate Bill 483. Senate Bill 483A refers to the Office of Energy within the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and House Bill 2938A takes the Office of Energy out of DCBS and makes it its own office. So you would also need to adopt a conceptual amendment that changes the references of the Office of Energy in Senate Bill 483 to be its own little agency. We have Mike Graney in the office, in the hearing room, who is from the Office of Energy, if you need clarification.
Mike, we need some help.
Chairman, good afternoon. Mike Graney from the Office of Energy.
Question is, how do we resolve the conflict?
I think it's just 43, Senate 43, which has already passed both chambers and gone to the governor, refers to and appropriates some funding, refers to us as the Office of Energy within Department of Consumer and Business Services. So if you pass House Bill 2938, I suppose the conceptual amendment would be to say that the Office of Energy within Department of Consumer and Business Services, referenced in Senate Bill 483, is the same Office of Energy established under this bill. And there's similar wording to that effect already for the budget that's in Section 7 of 2938 that transfers the budget that was in our in DCBS's overall budget, but our portion of that. So I think it's probably analogous language to that.
Do you have that?
I've got it.
Cut that down in a form that we can be.
And I'd be glad to work with Marjorie to draft the language out if you need to.
All right. Help us through this step by step. Then.
We have three separate motions.
We have three separate amendments.
Chair, for our members of the committee, I think if you start out by amending the amendment first,
okay,
that would be easier.
I believe you're correct. I would accept a conceptual amendment to amend the -11 amendment. And that tell us what that wording should be.
Just for members of the committee, there are a number of changes to the -A11 amendment. Line 1, page 1, would change page 1 to page 4. Starting at the words line 2, delete the rest of the line, delete all of line 2, delete all of line 3. On line 4, change section 1 to section 9. And on page 2, on line 3, change section 2 to section 10. Line 6, change section 1 to section 9. Line 7, section 3 is now section 11. And section 4 is section 9. I mean, section 1 should be section 9. On line 8, the number 2 should be 10. On line 9, section 4 should be section 12. Insert the statement section 9 to 11 of this 1999 Act, repealed December 31st, 2001.
Mr. Chair, you shouldn't be doing this. These are a lot of changes, and there's numbering changes. First off, they usually come running down the hall and they're here by now when we try to do conceptual amendments. But
I believe they are, maybe.
Are they maybe made it? Yes. But we get away with some of the little ones, you know, like. But this is not well tired. It's pretty technical, and I'm just nervous that what if we do something wrong? It surely can't take that long to get this done appropriately out of LC. I mean, we're not doing substantive changes to the bill. We're doing a lot of technical changes to the amendment. So I just think that this one ought to be done by LC to make sure we get it right. Then I'll oppose the amendment for a whole other set of reasons. If you want to do the amendment, you ought to make sure that it's right, and that means running this one through LC. Not that I don't trust staff, I do, but at the end of the session, we give them a whole lot of things to do, and this is just beyond the scope of what they normally will allow us to do. Because once the session's done, they don't get to go in and change these things again.
Did you think the chair could also discuss? Okay. Beyond what you just said, we need the conceptual amendment to remove sections 3 and 4 out of the bill. We need to change the -11 amendment, and then we also need to adopt a concept amendment. So there are 3 amendments. How much time is left?
I'm sure I understand our use until
the chair comes back. Exactly. He probably has instructions that we're not privy to.
Right.
You know what? We could close the.
He makes the call.
No, I meant can come back to it.
You want
to
move on to another bill?
Move on to another bill. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Are we in a work session or public?
You are in a work session.
Okay, Dad, I'm going to recess. The work session on House Bill 2938, and we'll come back to it. And what's the next one?
Shut up,
Oh, this is an easy one.
Oh, geez. Oh. I've heard that before.
Okay. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3635. What's it, 3635? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite Representative Kinsbury and his lovely wife, Tony.
And absolutely lovely.
And Catherine.
Oh, there it is.
Catherine. Well, this is Catherine. Okay, Neil.
Oh,
there it
is. Catherine, yeah, she's on here. So we'll have you guys testify and then come. Okay, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Brian Kinsbury, State Representative District 22. Thank you for doing a work session on this bill. Let me just say that what this bill will do is create safe and appropriate care by requiring training and supervision, and licensure of these agencies will give consumers an avenue for complaints to be addressed and their concerns to be resolved. So let me just get away from my testimony because you have been given letters, but what we have found through working with a constituent is that those folks who work in in-home care agencies are not licensed by the state. The result of that has been is that when complaints have been made of substandard care, that there's no avenue to process these complaints because there is no licensure. And this does not affect, of course, home health agencies. There's a difference between the two. And what we're seeing is care being given to folks that are needing long-term attention, even in their homes, not getting the proper care because there's no licensure. Now, I am not a fan of increased government regulation or a fan of adding to agencies at all, but certainly when we're dealing with our most vulnerable part of our society, the aged, the sick, the infirm, people who have a tendency to be able to be taken advantage of when they allow people into their homes, these folks ought to have background checks and they ought to have some kind of training and licensure to be able to do what they're doing in the homes of these folks. There are approximately, according to the health agency, about 150 of these people operating in our state today. Probably will be a growing contingent because of the growing need, and we think it is an appropriate time to be able to have this become a bill. It passed the House 57-0. There were no oppositions to it, and testimony on the House side, the health agency is well able, under the amount of money here for licensure, to be able to process this. So I submit this to the committee for your approval.
Has it been through Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, there is no requirement on the general fund. This will all be taken care of by the licensure. Bill says up to $500. The health agency has said to us probably we're looking at $375, $350 is what this license fee will cost.
Okay. You'll go to the emergency board if the money comes in.
Understand that. Is there any opposition?
As far as I know, there is no opposition. The state health officer testified on the House side in favor of this. Health agency is here, and they're in favor of this. And as far as I know, there's no opposition.
Sounds like it's signed up. We're in a work session.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3635 for due recommendation.
Senator Parnell has moved House Bill 3635 for due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Duke?
Aye.
Senator Kennedy? Senator Kennedy?
Aye.
Senator Parnell?
Aye.
Senator Weil?
Aye.
Aye. I can see the necessary majority. House Bill 2938. Whoop, looking at the wrong bill. House Bill 3635 has moved to the floor for due pass recommendation. Carrier. Senator Duke will carry.
Thank you
very much. Going to announced that our recess on House Bill 2938 will extend or no, we will actually I'm going to bring us back into work session on 2938. Announce that we are going to move that bill to 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, which time we hope to have all the conflicting amendments sorted out. That close the work session on House Bill 2938. And we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2813. And we have the interested parties here to talk about that. Why don't you tell us about that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2813 is the bill that originally allowed for victims of domestic violence to collect unemployment benefits until health, safety, or welfare would be endangered at their current workplace. What we have before us are the -A3 amendments dated 6/23/99, which are replacement amendments. The issue of the domestic violence
The domestic violence issue is being dealt with by the Department of Employment through administrative rules. So that is no longer what 2813 does. What it does do is the A3 replace, like I said, the entire bill. What it's doing is allowing the employment department, a hearing referee, or the employment appeals board to address issues related to disqualification of receipt of unemployment benefits, regardless of how the parties characterize the issues. Specify certain conditions when an employee may not be disqualified from receiving unemployment benefits, and indicate that the unemployment claim filed on or after the effective date of the act is subject to provisions of this measure. Annette Talbot is here from the Department of Employment for further clarification and explanation.
Yes, please. Bill necessary for the work of the department?
It is, Mr. Chair. Annette Talbot, Legislative Coordinator for the Employment Department. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the A3 amendment. A fairly recent Court of Appeals case has given the department a little bit of pause in some of the things that it said in the case. We run an insurance program for unemployment insurance. For that purpose, we believe we need to look at all the facts and apply the state law to those facts and not necessarily rely on the characterization of the parties. Similar to an insurance kind of health insurance coverage where the employer and the employee couldn't agree to what was in the policy and what was covered, the insurance company gets to do that. And you can appeal that if you want, but I think that's the best analogy. And we need to be assured that we continue to have that authority, and the case seemed to suggest that we might not in dicta. So we would very much appreciate that clarification, and we will be working with both employers and labor in implementing rules to address that as well. There is another piece to the amendment that addresses layoff situations. We are neutral on that. It is not our amendment. It's in Section 1, Subsection 11, I believe, and it addresses a situation that arises when an employer, particularly in the construction field, says, you know, five of you need to go by Friday because the job's almost done, and five people agree that they'll go. They're not quitting. They're just agreeing to be one of the first people laid off, and that amendment just clarifies that. In certain trades, there aren't seniority issues like there are in others, so that was done at the request of Bob Shiprack, and I don't believe he was able to make it here today, so certainly it's something the department is fine with and would like it clarified in statute. He would like it clarified in statute. That's fine with us.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
So you're supporting the replacement of the bill with the A3 amendment?
We are, Mr. Chair. And just for the record, let you know that today we put the notice for the domestic violence rule into the notice for the Secretary of State bulletin, so we are progressing on that.
Thank you very much. We're in work session. Is there any questions? Well, by the way, need a motion to move the dash 3 minutes?
Move the dash 3 minutes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Tarno has moved the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2813. They replace the original bill. As for discussion, any objections? Hearing none, for order.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2813 is moved to the floor.
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 2813 as amended to the floor for the pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Booth?
Aye.
Senator Kennan? Senator Tarno?
Aye.
Senator Wilde?
Aye.
Senator Carr?
Aye.
Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2813 moves forward to do pass recommendation. Carrier? Chair will carry. Thank you. We're going to open a work session.
We're going to do that.
On Senate Bill 875.
Senate Bill 875 replaces the original. You have dash 5 amendments that replace the original Senate Bill 875. The dash 5 amendments that are under consideration provide that when a state employee who works in remote areas on telecommunications devices and feels that their personal safety is at risk, the agency, their employing agency, shall be required to evaluate their duties to determine if their personal safety is at risk because of the work assignment. Then the agency shall allow the employee to possess a firearm while working in the remote area if the agency determines that the employee's personal safety is at risk, the employee has completed a training program approved by the agency, the employee has initiated a concealed handgun license. The employee is required to pay the cost of the training program. If the agency determines that the employee's safety is not at risk, then that determination is subject to review under a contested case proceeding. Two other provisions of the bill provide that an agency is not subject to liability based on the employee's use of the firearm, and that a self-inflicted injury resulting from a worker's possession of the firearm is not a compensable injury for workers' compensation.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm obviously very tired. But according to this, we're going to tell them, we're going to determine that they're at risk. We're going to allow them to have a gun, and if they shoot somebody, it's not our fault.
That's pretty clear.
And on top of that, if they can't afford the training, after we've determined that their personal safety is at risk, if they can't afford the training, we're going to leave them in the job anyway?
I know.
And then I was kind of curious as to what in remote areas on telecommunications devices meant, just who those people were.
Okay. Can you call Gabe Knapp? District Questor of the bill.
I'm sorry. They were reviewing it, and I was having trouble. It's clear that we let them have a gun, and then if they shoot somebody, it's not our fault.
Well, it is. I would just like to say that we met with Virginia, with all the opponents, the heads of the agencies, the risk management people. Well, go ahead and say who you are, please.
Yeah. Chairman Starr, members of the committee. My name is David Hayden. I'm a employee of the state of Oregon.
And you do this?
Yep.
Tell us how come you want to do. That's what we want you to do. Tell us what you do, how you want to do.
I'm currently employed by the Department of Transportation. I work on their microwave communication system. It's a statewide system that goes completely around the state, and it's been a considerable amount of time.
And you have about 10 of you?
I think total with ODOT, there's around 15.
15. And why do you want a gun?
I've been employed by the state for, 16 years, and during that course of time, there's been several occurrences that have made my hair stand on end. You never know for certain who you're going to come across out there or who's going to come across you. I've had incidents where I've come across people that had guns. One that stands out in my mind is some heavily tattooed guys with a couple teenage girls at a campsite, and they had their guns leaned against the trailer. The map that I had indicated that the road went completely around the mountain that I was surveying, and I got about 100 yards past the camp, and the road ended, and the creek dumped into the river, and the only way across, or the only way out, was either back by their camp. And they had not exactly looked like they were comfortable with our presence. At that time, I worked for state police, and I had a state police badge on my shoulder, but no weapon. So we were evaluating whether or not to attempt to ford the creek. And while we were evaluating that, one of the guys came over and told us that we should be able to ford it there. And the other guy came about halfway up and stood and just glared, had his arms crossed. We didn't know what the situation was going to turn out to be, and when we finally forded the creek, the fan blade on our engine was in the water. The water was up to my gas pedal, and we've wondered for a long time what might have happened if the truck had become disabled. And there's been, several occurrences like that.
How about animals?
On a snowcat trip, up to a place called Mount Horeb. The road was washed out in the 96 flood, and so we couldn't go the normal route, so we had to winch our way up the side of the hill to get to the site of the critical piece of equipment. I was working for State Forestry at that time, and because of our slow progress, I decided to go out ahead of the snowcat on foot and see if our efforts were in vain. As I, after I got a couple hundred yards in front of the snowcat, I came across cougar tracks and quickly went back to the snowcat because I had no way to defend myself. So there are incidents where we do have wild animals to be concerned about. We're also on call 24 hours a day. We can be out any time of day or night.
I just want to say that yesterday, the alternative forces here opposing this bill at risk management, Jim Brown from the forestry, and all the people, and we went back and legislative council kind of redid the bill to solve all the problems. State police were here, and it has no opposition. However, Fred Thompson, are you in here? Yes. Would you come up? And we just went and asked Virginia and Legislative Council for this one amendment. We were hoping to get it finished, and that should have taken half an hour. Would you, I only have one copy. Would you talk about this? Do you have more? We could possibly amend this in the House, but if we could amend it today, it wouldn't need two printings.
Chair Starr, committee members, my name is Frank Thompson, assistant director with the Oregon Department of Corrections. I hope it's acceptable for me to submit it for your attention, suggested verbiage that would address our concerns. And it, as I've handwritten it, that would be subsection D to section 1, which would, if accepted, read similar to the agency shall allow the employee to possess a firearm while working in a remote area if such possession does not conflict with security interests of other legitimate governmental operations. That's important to us because we want to maintain the ability to restrict proximity of weapons to inmate activities at our facilities and grounds. We have work crews that work in remote areas of the state, and Shutter Creek Correctional Institution down there at Coos Bay, South Fort Forest Camp up near Tillamook, in Ontario, and in Baker City. We are concerned that maybe if enacted in its present form, it would restrict our ability to control proximity of weapons to inmate activities.
So, if it's your pleasure, I would adopt that. We just went over it with Virginia, and she said, I'm not sure that's where we should put it. Then she said, no, that's the right place to put it. So, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Arnold. I've got quite a few concerns about this.
Okay.
I addressed those concerns already, I think, through the sponsor of the bill. First of all, I think we're creating a state to a degree in a situation of liability. And I'd like just to start off on line 7 of the Dennis 5, where it says the agency shall allow the employee to possess a firearm. I mean, that word shall bothers me, and I'm inclined to say, why can't we just say the agency may allow the employee to possess a firearm while working where it is if the agency determines the employee's social safety is at risk. I don't like the word shall because then it becomes mandatory on the agency.
Now, Jim Brown, the director of the Forest Service, he requested the shall in a certain place, and I don't see it below. Well, that was.
Well, I think it maybe just above. Chairman, on line 5, will say the agency shall evaluate the employee's duties.
Okay.
Determine. And then on down, if I may, go ahead, Mr. Chair.
Help
you. It can feel hang on last since you got nothing to do with this whole thing.
Right.
No bearing whatsoever for the employees. They got a pickup truck, they got number 22 on the rack, and the back of the pickup truck. So a concealed license, to me, has got no bearing on this as an issue of personal safety because employees can have that weapon in plain sight.
Well, Senator Tarnow, that's not true with the Forest Service. They made a policy because one of the people went in to the office of the Forest Service in one of the areas, and a woman said, oh, a gun, and so...
And I said, no, it was Federal Forest Service, not the Muskie.
Uh-huh. Oh, you're talking Federal?
Yes, that was Federal.
Forest Service anymore, anyway.
I thought it did.
I was an employee of Oregon Department of Forestry at the time, and it was Oregon Department of Forestry.
Okay.
And that's what prompted this, is that Forestry came out with a written policy that precluded us from carrying.
So they couldn't protect themselves anymore?
And they could be, didn't you conceal?
Oh, I think it was concealed because it was on there. You're right. Why did we? Oh, because you have to qualify for concealed, and if you're a felon, you can't get one. Have a record. It was just another safeguard, but you didn't really mean, you just wanted it on your belt, didn't you, or whatever?
We're listening.
I know. I'm sorry, I should go through you.
Senator Tarnow is talking about having a gun in the vehicle that's not concealed.
Okay.
That's what I'm understanding.
Yes, sure. It doesn't have to be concealed.
It doesn't have to be concealed weapon to be available for protection.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a real problem with our state agencies telling them that they shall allow their employees to carry a concealed weapon. That really bothers me a lot.
Okay, well, that's fine. Only thing is if first they have to determine that it's necessary. But, okay, that was the problem. It just says they have, if they say it's not necessary, it doesn't happen anyway.
Yeah, you didn't eliminate that. Chairman Starr, Members of the Committee, I believe that the forestry policy is against any weapon with you. It doesn't matter if it's concealed or not.
And
that's a department policy.
So how would you want that corrected?
I'm sorry, I missed the statement.
He said that any weapon, you can have one in your pickup and you can't have one if you're walking through the woods.
They listed their trappers. They have a few trappers that they employ, and the trappers could carry a weapon. And I believe that was the only individual that could carry a weapon of any kind, concealed or not. My request for a concealed weapon was to reduce the intimidation that some employees may feel if they're uncomfortable with guns.
If you want to take concealed, that you don't have a problem, do you?
Mr. Chair, other employees won't have to even see the gun if they don't put the gun on their person until they head out in the field. There's no sense in packing a gun inside an office building. There's no sense in packing it in a parking lot. You don't need the gun yet. You pack the gun when you go up in the hills to perform your duties, and you use that as a safety precaution. So I'm not sure where the intimidation aspect comes from. First of all, I've got a little bit of a problem with you guys wearing shoulder patches in order to say police when you, in fact, aren't police officers. You're civilians. But yet you've got a patch on your shoulder that says you're Oregon State Police. That's false impersonation of police officers, right?
I don't know the laws regarding that, sir.
Do you have one of your option? I mean, sir, may I ask?
I wore the uniform that I was given, sir.
I'm on. Okay. Mm-hmm. I understand. That's true. I'm going to work trying to pass some good legislation, but this thing is right now really worrying me. I'm really afraid of the exposure of liability that the state may face with this.
Well, may I say something? I will say that the workers' comp people were in there, the risk management people, the state police, forestry, just the other one. And they really thought our hearing was going to be applied. They were, and before we left yesterday, they all said they could support it the way it was. And I wish you would have been there. But if you want to wait another day, then...
As it is now, I can't hear anything.
It's okay.
Let's get some other testimony here.
Okay.
Your proposed amendment, we have copies up, and I thank you for that. I think it's appropriate. Not to forget.
Okay.
Jeff Sal, with that consideration, the Department of Corrections could live with Dash 5 Amendment or Dash 6 as it's being considered by it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. We have some state police out here, Forestry Department.
Mr. Chair, while they're coming up, could I throw my two cents at you? I share Senator Carno's concerns, but I have more. It says the agency shall allow the employee to possess a firearm, and the training we give them may include the use of firearms for the purposes of self-defense and confrontation training. So it doesn't have to include. I use this thing in terms of self-defense. The issue of concealed weapons isn't an issue in the Dash 5s because it says possess a firearm. It doesn't say anything about it having to be a concealed weapon. All I know is if a state employee was authorized a gun by a state agency and they shot my son, you don't tell me that I can't sue that state agency because I would find a way to do it. And that's, I know that online and on page 2 we're saying is not subject to actions or suits based on an employee's use of a firearm, but people are going to figure out a way to get in and go after. I just think that's crazy that if we tell a state employee that because we think they're at risk that they should have, it's okay for them to have a gun, but we're not responsible for what they do with that gun. I don't understand that at all. And I'm not real pleased with the section on page 4 that also says that if they happen to shoot themselves with a gun, that they don't get workers' comp. We have told them they can have the gun. We have put them on the job with the gun. And if they accidentally, you know, there's some defect in the gun, then it's not a workers' comp piece. So it's fair to say that I have several. I think that they are probably all, well, I don't know, or maybe not the liability stuff, but all achievable. But there's just a lot of, and the other piece is what the employee has to take pay for the training themselves, which says that if the employee, we have already made the determination that the employee's personal safety is at risk, and they either can't afford the training or they choose not to pay for it, then we have sent someone out to a job where we have determined that they're at risk and they don't have a gun, and if they're injured, I think we're really liable.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, my name is Clark Steele, and I'm the Assistant State Forester for Administrative Services for the Department of Forestry.
We have unanswered questions here. How do you see this affecting your department?
Mr. Chair, as Senator Shannon indicated, the State Forester was here yesterday and worked with a group late in the day with legislative counsel to propose the amendments shown in Dash 5. We had significant concern originally with the Dash 1 amendment when it was proposed for all employees of the state and was fairly broad in language. This amendment obviously narrows the scope to a fairly small number of employees. We have depending upon whether you consider our engineers, radio engineers here in Salem as falling within this category, we have 8 to 10 employees department-wide who would be considered under this language. We do share the concern expressed about line 7 with the word shall versus may, and that would be one area that we would like to see change made in the Dash 5 amendment. Frankly, it's a difficult call to make, in terms of assessing the employee's personal safety and whether or not that was at risk. As you all can envision and are well aware, obviously every job involves some degree of risk on a daily basis, and a number of our field positions in the department, whether it be in the Forest Practices Program or the Fire Program, carry some degree of safety risk with them on a day-to-day basis. The extent of that risk in terms of physical violence against an employee from another person, again, is one that's difficult to assess. We have made an attempt to do that, though, in recent years and provide our employees who are possibly exposed to that kind of risk, and frankly, the forest practice foresters who are out on the landings with operators often are the ones who are exposed to that kind of confrontational person-to-person risk. We take those employees through training to make them aware of that kind of exposure and how they can, in a non-physical way or a non-combative way, deal with that kind of a hostile environment. And the key message that we teach is to back away from the situation immediately, get out of the situation, and then rely upon our communication system to take that kind of a situation from there. We rely upon, significantly rely upon, our relationship with both county sheriff's departments as well as state police to then come in and deal with the situation as it may be need to be dealt with. That's not, I wouldn't say that kind of a situation is common, but it's also not rare. We do have employees who need to make that judgment call in a hostile situation, back out
of the situation. I think this is specifically to the people, not engineers in Salem, not people on landings. It specifically says telecommunication devices in remote areas. How many engineers do you think you have here in Salem of those scams?
Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, we have two engineers here in Salem and then eight radio technicians, communication technicians scattered around the state.
They go out in remote areas?
Yes.
So it's eight we're talking about?
It's eight. Generally, the two engineers here in Salem may also go out to remote locations, but it's eight or ten.
And did you notice that line 14 was put in there because of Mr. Brown yesterday, confrontation?
Yes. Yes.
And also, I'm positive we changed 7 shell to May because I remember saying, well, if it doesn't happen, they don't allow somebody, then we review it 2 years before. So I know that was May, Senator Turner.
Mm-hmm. We seem to have significant problems yet with this in that both Senator Turner and Senator Briggs are suffering problems or have problems with still. I think it is a non-consensual measure D on page 4.
Page 4?
It's probably should not have been included. I understand that they're trying to lower the threshold of concern about those employees who have been authorized to carry weapons. I think that if that authorization was granted, that they must have the compensability. I don't know how to deal with this, Mr. Senator Arnold.
Yeah. Clark, you know, if the employees who work on our communications or communication systems for us are all part of one agency, or do they belong to like ODOT, state police, state parks, state forestry, etc.?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tarno, with the way the -5 amendment is currently drafted, I believe that the agencies involved would be the Department of Forestry, Department of Transportation, and the state police.
Right, you each have your own relay stations, your own microwave towers, or what have you, irrespective of other agencies, or are they all tied together?
Mr. Chair, Senator Tarno, they among those three agencies, they are not tied together. They are independent systems. However, with the Department of Forestry's radio system, for example, we share that system with the State Parks Department and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Those three agencies use the system. We do all of the maintenance on the system. So those two agencies do not have radio technicians.
We have state police in the back room. Can we ask them to come forward for a moment, please?
Good afternoon. I'm Captain Chuck Hayes with the Oregon State Police and the director of our training division.
Chuck, when you guys go out and work on your radio stations and radio towers, are they sworn troopers?
No, sir.
Do they pack firearms?
Mr. Chair and Senator Parno, they do not, and they're not sworn.
How would you feel about them packing firearms? Are you comfortable with allowing those folks to pack firearms?
Mr. Chair and Senator Tarno, we do have some concerns with this, obviously. Our concerns were, number one, the training aspect, because it's going to create a great deal of training if this occurs. Our troopers go through a large amount of training, and it would mean getting these people, the employees, up to that speed where we could feel comfortable with them carrying a firearm. Our second concern, other than the training aspect and the dollars involved there just to put together a training program like that, is that there's also the possibility that other agencies may come to the state police and say, we would like to have you train our people as well. Within the state police, we have 12 to 14 people that work as telecommunications employees that go to the remote areas of the state. So we're not talking about a great deal, a large amount of people, but yet 12 to 14 right now. Beyond that, we also are concerned about the liability issues as well. Putting someone with a firearm into the remote areas of the state, the incidents or issues that we have had in the past have been mainly with landowners, not so much with the animals and things like that, because our particular communication towers, the majority of those are fenced in. So not all, but the majority of those. So that may not be an issue with the animals and things like that. It may be just getting there. Another concern that we have, and again, this would be a training issue for the state police, is that how the interaction of other law enforcement agencies, because if, say, a confrontation did occur or something occurred where this particular employee had to use the firearm for self-defense purposes, and maybe it was because of other people, not so much the animals, well, then law enforcement responding to that situation, they may not, the employee may not be trained properly as to how to interact with the law enforcement and some of those type of skills that might be needed. And we're always concerned, again, too, that maybe law enforcement may not recognize our employee as an employee that carries a weapon or a state police employee, and they are not sworn. So, again, there's our concerns there of that interaction.
What do you say?
Senator Wild.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a hard time with that last testimony. First of all, if you look at Section 1, 1A, the agency must determine that the employee's personal safety is at risk. I mean, if you make that determination that an employee's safety is at risk, wouldn't you feel a little foolish sending them out into the field without anything to protect themselves? I mean, in order for them to get this, you must determine that their safety is at risk. Well, if you don't offer them a way to mitigate that danger, it seems to me you're being a very irresponsible employer in the first place. I mean, that is one of the criteria that must be met prior to allowing them to carry the firearm. And so I have a very difficult time with your testimony.
That's directed towards me.
Yeah.
Okay. Senator Wild and Mr. Chair. First of all, maybe I was not sure where I was going with that, but the response is that if with the state police, if we determine that there is the employees at a risk, well, then we would take necessary precautions. And the employees have cell phones. They also have radios. And they have been instructed that if they encounter something like that, then they are to call the state police, and then local law enforcement would be there whenever practical to assist. But if the employee tells us that their safety is at risk, well, then we would definitely look into that to ensure that we have taken every precaution that we can.
So could I follow up? Yeah. So in other words, this isn't that troubling to you because that is the first thing you must determine before making these other determinations. So if you do determine that their safety is at risk, could probably send a trooper along or something like that. And so you might never have to require or allow them to have a firearm. But you will have to make that determination. I'll just stop there.
Okay. Senator,
in order to allow them to
have the sort of question of me?
No, no, ma'am. I have a request before we, if we ever move the bill before we do, but not a, no questions of them.
Well,
any further questions of the witnesses?
And that is that I did the math. There's three agencies this applies to. One has 8, one has 12, one has 10. There's 30 people that eventually in time it may be decided that they are so far out in the mountains, 911 couldn't get there within an hour. And who this applies to, I mean, you may only decide there's three people you'll send out there. And I'm just surprised when we brought up every possible thing yesterday so to solve it, that the scenario, you know, I am disappointed because I thought everything was resolved yesterday.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Shannon. Yesterday when we discussed this, I did mention the concerns because of the training aspect and the liability. So at that
point, and that's why we met him.
And then, again, we're just concerned about that because it would mean that if this passes, that we have within the state police, and I think the other agencies as well, and I don't want to speak for them, but we definitely would have some things that we would have to do to move forward to make this happen. So those are my concerns as well.
Thank you very much. Senator Arnold, and
I think there's a way that and I'm not saying this could happen maybe this session or right away, but if we could find out from the board on public safety standards and training that they could offer a one-week training program for engineers of this type and have a special class of that is available to 14 or 16 men or women who do this kind of work to make the academy could put on a week program for them and train them. And the use of firearms, and that may reduce the liability of others if they had that adequate training program. I don't know.
Senator Turner, we called them, and my staff did. Amanda's not here. But they, I think, was it the Monmouth people that said they possibly that they couldn't do it? I can't remember. Maybe a man will come down. But we did deal with them. That was the first people they asked us to talk to, and it didn't seem to be a every roadblock thing we've got around, you know, works through. When is our last hearing? I mean, could we bring this back?
Next July.
When are we going to find it out?
Are we scheduling another meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
8 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
Do you think you can solve it by 8 o'clock in the morning?
I'd like to.
Introduce.
I'd like to hear from risk management. I'm sure that the insurance rates are higher for agencies who have people who carry guns than they are for the agencies that don't have people to carry guns. And even if it's not our fault if they shoot somebody and it's not our fault if they shoot themselves, my gut tells me that the insurance rates are going to go up when we let people carry guns. And I'd also like to hear from the third agency that has people who fall under this category and that so does.
Okay. I think that's the risk management.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Baird. I'm the Deputy Administrator for the Risk Management Division with the Department of Administrative Services. And I'm here to answer any questions that you might have. I might be able to give you a little bit more information, if I may, since we had a chance to review the Dash 5 amendments with representatives of the Department of Justice today. And after seeking their advice and opinion, there is a concern that's being expressed that the immunity language may not survive a court challenge, if you will. And we don't know how that might come about. But the impression that we have right now...
The person they shoot?
I'm sorry?
From the family of the first person they shoot?
From basically anyone. We believe that whenever you have a weapon discharged and someone is injured, you're certainly going to have claims and lawsuits that will come out of that. This is a somewhat unique approach to a situation in trying to completely waive any rights to remedies or claims. And it's our impression that it likely would not survive a court challenge. And it's also our impression that it would certainly result in increased litigation costs to the state.
So, I mean, have there been a possibility, Mr. Chair, that someone who is a less than stable personality ends up with one of these guns, shoots an unarmed person, maybe even an unarmed person who was fleeing, and we just said, that's too bad, you can't sue the state. And I guess tells you that one ain't going to make it.
Or for some stable person, just might do it anyway.
Well, the association fee is not.
But I mean, that's what the courts would do.
Okay.
We are, I think, out of options, just have a day hold on. Oh, yeah. I think 30 days. Find people willing to work on a better solution than this. It's not there. Out of options for the session. Is that among both workstation on House Bill 875?
Yeah.
Senate Bill 875. And you'll be opening the workstation on House Bill 3055.
We're considering dash A7 amendment to House Bill 3055 that would delete the provision in the bill allowing an administrative law judge to serve as an arbitrator, a teacher, or engage in other outside activities on the personal time. We also would require each member of the Workers' Compensation Board in the dash A7 amendment to take an oath affirming that the member does not hold any other office or position of profit that will interfere with their ability to fully perform the duties that they have as a member of the Workers' Compensation Board. And we have Chris Baby here from State who speaks to the bill.
Realize this information.
This is sufficient.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm late for a conference committee, Mr. Chair.
All righty. Why don't you, go ahead and see
your food on your affection if
I can. And
I actually wanted to speak to the dash 5 amendments. Are those under consideration still?
Dash 5 amendments are. Yes.
Dash 8
amendments. Dash.
If the dash, Mr. Chair, if the dash 5 is not a consideration, then you don't need to hear from me.
House Bill 3055.
Okay. And it's the dash 87. You have no interest in those?
No. It was some wording in the A5s, but if they're not under consideration, that's fine.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You could fix them up, huh?
We are there sure. Questions regarding the A7? I would like to move the A7 amendments into a part of that hospital. So there is problems with that. And I have a motion.
Mr. Chair, I'll move the dash A7 amendments to House Bill 3055.
Senator Dukes has moved the dash A7 amendments to House Bill 3055. Any discussion?
opposition? Hearing none, forward.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3055 as amended for the floor to be passed. Recommendation?
Senator Dukes has moved House Bill 3055 as amended for the floor with a due pass recommendation. No further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Dukes?
Aye.
Senator Kennedy? Senator Colonel? Senator Wilde?
Aye.
Senator Carr?
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. Senate Bill 3055 as amended is moved before the due pass recommendation. 3055.
I screwed it up. My fault.
3055, 3055. Carrier? Yeah. Sure. Good idea. That will work. We got one left.
3629.
We got one bill left. And that is the work session council 3629.
We are considering -A11 amendments that would replace the current bill, and it would require the Center for Research on Occupational and Environmental Toxicology at OHSU to review current scientific and medical literature concerning occupational exposures to hepatitis B and C and to report its findings to the next legislative assembly.
Discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm just sort of curious as to why. I mean, I know that the bill is important to some folks, and I didn't know that there was a problem with it, and so I'm curious as to why we're now leaving it lay and moving to a study.
Well, it is because it's important that we decided that we would do something about it. My feeling that it is a really important issue, and that through MLAC and through the study we can better understand, instead of taking what we in testimony indicate 5% of the infections probably were, as far as public safety officers, probably were job related or through direct contact with blood, we would be making a presumption that all cases were, but the 95% that are not believed to be from direct contact, then the employers put in the place of proving that it was not. And we think that further study would better enlighten us as to the proper way to handle this or to approach it. And so, rather than just let the bill die, which could have happened very easily, we felt that it would be better to ask for respect.
Seems a shame that there isn't some way of working it out. I mean, these folks are exposed to a lot of dangerous things. This one isn't curable.
There aren't there a lot of activities off the job that can do it?
Mm-hmm. The testimony we also had was that healthcare workers are likely exposed to a higher level, and that through the study we might find that we want to include them. That is at least the reasoning and rationale behind doing this death and stuff.
Mr. Chair, members, I'd also point out that we have a letter from the Department of Consumer and Business Services dated today in your packet that talks about the data on the number of
hepatitis claims and the number that were accepted and not accepted, that the data that was that some testimony was based on at our last hearing was not accurate, and so the accurate data as far as the number of accepted claims is attached in your packet under cover from DCBS.
We are in a work session, and it's the 8-11th amendment that Chair would like to have moved.
So I'm going to do this, but I want to make a statement first. I'd like to have more information regarding our employees who have the potential for coming in contact with bad needles, hepatitis C or B or what have you. We got some stuff from the state folks, and I appreciate that. But I've also got some information from the local firefighters about employees who have contacted hepatitis C, which were not part of the state records. And so we've gotten part of the information, we haven't gotten all of it. And I think it's incumbent upon us to see the whole picture and get all the information if we can. And I think it's it may be a more serious problem than what we really realize. We got employees out there, state employees or municipal employees who do have hepatitis C, and they got it during the course of their employment, and they're not being covered by workers' comp in the job.
Certainly, I agree. And that's why that I'm really desirous of moving ahead with this study, and the complete information that we now have does, in fact, I believe, include those employees who were denied coverage. It's a very different report than we first had.
Mr. Chairman, the A11 Ministry Hospital, 3629.
Before I vote, I would just like to say that I noticed it lists workers, but it's disturbing to me that people that agree to be foster parents are not allowed to know the health of the children that they bring into their homes. They cannot have tests to see if they have hepatitis or AIDS or any of that. If they do know it, they're not allowed to tell the parents to foster care. And I certainly hope that they would be somehow included. This may not be the bill, but some people now are telling me they will not be foster parents because they can't know the diseases or the health of the kids they take in.
Probably not exactly related to this, but it may be an important issue.
Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Senator Duke.
It's one out of ignorance here. There's a section in the bill that talks about how a claim would be processed. I'm assuming that a person can make a claim today with this kind of claim. And would it be worthwhile to lay out the process
that's in the bill, which is section 3? I mean, if we're doing it today, maybe this would just make it clearer as to how the heck they go about doing it, and do that while we're in the process of doing the study.
Remove the major part of the bill and replace it with space. Senator Duke is suggesting that we might leave in section 3. What is the effect of that?
Mr. Chair, I don't actually have the original bill in front of me, but if that's the part that says that if it's an injury, if it's in a specifically identified event. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Chris Davey from Space Corporation. Well, I think, Mr. Chair, the practice today is that if a hepatitis claim is filed, it is generally treated as an occupational disease. Our occupational disease claims have slightly different proof standards than injury claims. And I think the intent behind this language was just to try to make some distinction between the events that you know about, where you specifically identify an exposure, and the situations where you could not identify a specific exposure, something that may have happened some years ago. And so the impact of passing, I believe you'd be referring to lines 32 through 37 of Section 3, would be that you would be laying out the means by which those two different kinds of claims would be processed. Whereas today, most of them are occupational disease claims. It would make some of them injury claims, where you would actually have, where the worker would have a lower burden of proof in the case of an injury than in the case of an occupational disease. These words, I think, were crafted by Representative Mannix in the House Rules Committee when the bill was originally amended.
Mr. Chair? Is it reasonable to leave this in while we're, if what we're going to do is that ask our waitress you to take a look at it for the next few years? But I mean, it seems to me this applies to what we're currently doing.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dukes, this is probably the only part of the bill that applies across the board, not just to a specific group of people. One of the other issues that had come up before was the Management Labor Advisory Committee and their interest in this bill, and they had not taken a position on this bill. The testimony you heard previously, I think, was that there was concern originally that it was a narrow piece of the bill, or a narrow piece of the system that was affected by this. These lines would affect everybody, and so I guess you still have the question then about whether the Management Labor Advisory Committee would support that language. And they have not met to discuss that.
But when they did meet, they didn't object to this particular portion of the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, they never did meet and discuss this bill. The testimony was that the co-chairs had discussed it, and there was some dispute about whether that was then an appropriate bill for them to look at or not.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Yes, we have a motion before us, and let's discuss the amendment since that's the motion before us.
Okay, we already moved the A11, so I wonder if we couldn't have a rebuttal to the last on this testimony.
We could.
The young lady, I can't think of her name, I'm sorry.
Athena.
Ms. Squires. And Mr. Chair, if you'll bear with me, did you address Section 3, which Senator Dukes has already expressed some concerns about it from your perspective?
Sure. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christina Squires, representing the Special Districts Association of Oregon. I believe, Senator Tarno, as we were walking out of the door, I think Chris Davey from SAFE was answering the question about exactly what Section 3 does. Section 3 lowers the burden of proof for an employee to prove their compensable injury. It deals with two specific issues, industrial injuries and occupational disease. Those are two different sets of standards that exist for the burden of proof that an employee would have to meet to gain compensability.
Thank you very much. Any other questions? Further discussion? The objections to the A11 amendment? Hearing none, order.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2629 as amended with the floor of the recommendation.
Senator Tarnall has moved House Bill 3629 as amended with the floor of the pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Booth?
No.
Senator Cameron?
Aye.
Senator Tarnall?
Aye.
Senator Wilhelm?
Aye.
Senator Carr?
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 3629 is amended to move forth to pass recommendation.
Okay.
You do it. Thank you. Senator Shannon will carry. That we've completed our agenda. We're adjourned the Senate Committee on Public Affairs.
Now, what's our schedule tomorrow?
With that.